It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie is back. We're going to get his update on WWDC. What was it like to play Table Slingshot? Andy Anako's also here. Alex Lindsay, too. We'll talk about Apple being fined in Australia and why they probably won't be fined here. And an update that's going to make it harder for the feds to get into your phone. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 615, recorded Tuesday, June 19th, 2018. Naughty Pine Futures. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a huge role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started right now at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together with some of the smartest minds in Macintosh journalism to talk about the latest news from Apple. The return, the triumphant return of our traveling man, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Leo. I missed you all terribly. I did not want to be away. It ended badly for me.
We literally haven't seen you since before WWDC.
I traveled, Leo, and then I lost my wallet. I accidentally deleted my phone while trying to play AR Slingshot with iJustine, and then I got horribly sick. So it worked. Like I said, it worked out well.
Wow. Well, I got to find out about that AR Slingshot thing in a second. But first, let me say hi to Andy Anako from Anako.com and the WGBH radio station and Canada, apparently.
Well, I'm a supporter of our I want to show solidarity with our we're still friends. Okay,
we're still friends. Still love you.
Thank you.
Forget that other guy.
We still love Canada. Yeah. Yeah. And Mr. Alex Lindsay is in the house. Great to have you too, Alex, from Pixel Core.
The best Canadian quote I heard the other week was, someday Canada is going to take over the world and then you'll all be sorry.
Oh, I'll be happy. Unless they're so nice because they've been holding back and they're going to release their hounds.
We don't have hounds. They're all, no. Being mean to Canada is like sucker punching Mr. Rogers. It just doesn't end well for anybody.
Well, there is good news that apparently China has told, President Trump has told Tim Cook that they will not tariff iPhones coming from China. That was a complicated sentence.
Yay.
Can you parse that sentence for me? It's interesting. Well, there's a great article in the New York Times on Sunday about Apple's two-pronged diplomatic outreach to, of course, China and to the president, trying to make sure that they can continue to make iPhones in China and get them into the United States without a tariff.
That'd be a big deal.
Well, they're not. TVs and phones are not tariffed at this point. And it wouldn't, by the way, just be Apple that would be inconvenienced by a phone tariff.
Be me.
Be everybody, really. Samsung phones are made in Korea for the most part, but and there are phones made in Taiwan. HTC makes its phones in Taiwan, but a lot of phones made in China. All right, tell us about slingshotting. We watched the video of you and Justine playing Table Slingshot. It looked like it was kind of fun.
So I had the slingshot session right before I was supposed to go talk to Apple about iOS 12. So I wanted to update my phone so I could see if I had any questions. And the over-the-air update wasn't working. So I very cleverly downloaded it to iTunes. And then I went over and I started doing it. And then like, come over. And Justine is all ready. And I race over and I press the button right before I leave. And I press restore instead of restore from backup.
Oh, no.
So all I see is the keys being thrown away and the phone being wiped.
And then
the worst part is that I got to talk. Jim Dalrymple was my briefing buddy for the day, and he was merciless. He was so mean that I'm starting to think he didn't leave Canada. He was actually deported.
Even after Apple featured him in the opening movie prominently in the middle as a developer walking down with the hordes of other developers.
Yeah, he had the beard, but Hockenberry had the hair, and I think maybe he was upset he had to share the. No. He was fantastic. He just would not let me. Oh, big time Apple expert deletes the phone. How's the phone doing, Rennie?
He was mean to you, not Apple.
Yes. No, me. Yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Jim's only mean to Apple when they touch his when they come anywhere near his music.
Come near my music.
Hey, how was the new? Did they do a podcast studio this year?
Yeah, it was really nice. They had like 3D printed walls with Apple Podcast logos on them. And I got to use them twice. I talked to the team who made Agenda, and then I talked to the team who made the app that scans the blood tissue to see how much is on the towels and then keeps a running record of how much blood you're saving or losing during an operation using machine learning, which was wild to me. I think it's called Trident, Trident Sponge. And it was just like you have four person setup, and they record it all for you and give you a GarageBand project at the end, which is really nice.
Oh, hey, that's cool. They record it on GarageBand.
Yeah. That's well, nice. I think it's a GarageBand project.
GarageBand or would they use Logic?
It might be Logic. Yeah, I think it might be Logic. I just pulled the WAV file because
right.
I didn't want to use the project that they made, so I just pulled the WAV file, but it was still great. Wow.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
They had a continual rotation.
Yeah. How is that slingshot game? Is it fun?
It's fun. So I got to try the Lego one first. The Lego one is a lot of fun. Like I would actually play the Lego game. Like you open up the Lego thing, you drop the Joker in, you watch him set fire to it. You pull the fire out, the fire truck around, you spray him down, you bring Batman over. He kind of looks around, starts hitting him. It's a lot of fun. The slingshot game is actually the sample code that they made to show you this multi-person AR. And I don't know what the limit is because they kept throwing people in there. You can have two or more players and then you can have multiple people watching it. And they had one of the people watching it on the television so everybody could watch it. And it looks like a table. And people were joking, this table holds all the hardware that Apple announced today. But it actually held this entire AR structure. And Justine killed me the first game because you're slingshotting, trying to knock down the other person's slingshots. And you're walking around, you have to pull them up. But once you get into multi-person and it's persistent, it's really cool. And it looks like Alex used to always talk about how you have to have it anchored or you don't believe the experience. And it was just rock solid, even when they had 4, 5, 6 people doing the demo together.
Well, and one of the things that's interesting about why it's rock solid is that just a little trick here that I think is going on with the AR. Is
yeah, I think so.
You have the wood table looks gorgeous.
Yep.
But it provides an awful lot of detail for the camera to grab onto. Because what it does is using that.
It left the knots in on purpose.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. You know, all that data is what makes it. It's able to grab onto all those things because basically you have. You have the accelerometer kind of telling you where you're at, you know, but that's plus or minus X number of degrees. And the final lockdown is grabbing onto elements, basically doing a 2D track into that space and then looking at the parallax to calculate the 3D location of the
iPad. Glossy black table would not have been ideal.
It would
in
have
that
been
situation.
Horrible. Like the only thing worse than a glossy black table would have been a glossy white table, but you know, because it would have blown out. And so smooth surfaces are not something that works well with.
But Knotty Pine. This is going to
Knotty Pine.
You know what? If I were a hedge fund manager, I would go out and invest in Knotty Pine futures.
And we have a title.
The other cool thing is they have these machine learning algorithms that try to fool you into thinking there's actual environmental maps on reflective surfaces. And when you're playing a game or you're just moving by, you don't notice
you
that they're not real.
You can't pay attention to it. Yeah.
But so it looks like there's actually a universal camera reflecting everything for you.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah, the AR stuff was legit. It was really well done. They had a whole AR gaming section. When you first walk in, there was like 4 tables. And I have to say, the Apple retail staff, all the Apple events are staffed by Apple retail. In this case, they were wearing orange shirts, and they were there all day, every day, motivating, welcoming, doing all the gameplay, doing all the handing out all the pins and everything. And they were flawless from beginning
to end. Was it your sense that that room was for journalists or for developers? It sounds like it was more for journalists.
For the first day, they had a couple, because they had YouTubers in on the first day, and they gave them a few minutes to go in and film their stuff. But then after that, there were just long lines of developers the entire show.
Interesting.
And they kept adding levels and adding sophistication. And at the very end, they had a tournament where the prize was all the pins that they handed out. And there was just teams of people like cheering, and you could hear it through the entire complex by the last day.
There's a long-standing debate, probably more in the outside than in the inside, but I wouldn't be surprised if Apple debates as well about what WWDC should be. And it turns out that if it's cool for journalists, it's cool for developers too. And coolness is important. Developers want to be writing software on a platform that's got some.
Well, I think that the genius of building that game is that it inspires developers to play with the AR game, and they gave them all the data. I mean, the Xcode is all there that provided. So if you want to figure out how that was done, how that was calculated, it's the, you know, I think that Apple and other companies supporting developers should do a lot more of that, you know, of building something that's actually usable, that's actually cool, and then something that you can tear it apart and look at it and figure out how it was actually built. I think that it was a genius thing to do.
Does Apple have crack developers who are there entirely for producing demos?
I have no idea.
That would be an interesting...
They have a dev pub team. So part of... The organization is all under Craig Federighi, and then I think Cheryl runs that section, and it's called Developer Publications, and they do everything from Swift Playgrounds to sample code to the online documentation.
Okay,
and
so sample code is almost a documentation function.
Yeah, and there are all stars that cycle through that group routinely.
Because if you're busy writing this stuff, you know, if you're Andy Hertzfeld, you don't really want to spend time writing demos. You probably don't even have time to write demos. Of course, you understand better than anybody what the product can do. So it would be smart for them to have a team. Maybe it is the technical documentation team that is interfacing with the people writing the actual code and then writing demo code to inspire developers and to show developers, show the way and inspire.
And I don't know about Apple, but most technology companies do have kind of teams that are just playing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like they're just...
Well, it's part of QA too, right?
Right, right.
But they've got to bang on it.
Dog fooding.
And they were super smart that... They put the AR game tables right at the main download area. So while you're waiting to download, there's no reason not to get up there and try out all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, we all, you know, saw the keynote. and then there are, if you want, and I guess, Renee, you've been watching these, you can also watch videos from every one of the presentations afterwards.
Yeah, the sessions are really good. I love the labs because they're really interesting. Everyone asks different questions, but they have these meetups that are amazing. Like they have health meetups and app meetups. And every year I make it a point to go to the accessibility meetup because to me that's where you see the really cool technologies. And there were two that were really stood out this year. One was this young guy. I can't tell how young he was. He just looked super young from Italy. And he made it so that you just put your iPhone 10 on a little tripod behind your Mac and the TrueDepth camera maps you turning your head or going up and down to move the cursor on your Mac, and you move your mouse side to side to click or double click, and you can navigate the entire Mac interface just using your iPhone 10, which means you don't have to buy usually a really expensive switch control system. And there was just a huge line of people looking at that. And another guy, he wanted to get away from society, so he went to like a remote island off the coast of the Maritimes. And then he got bored and he made an app that would just read your reading list to your kids. And overnight, right after they announced Siri Shortcuts, that night he integrated it in so he could just say, Siri, read a story. And it would just start reading from his Safari bookmark pages to his kids, to him. And he integrated Chair. And it became huge for the blind community because they've been waiting for something that would just queue up and start reading anything they wanted to it.
So you don't even have to, it looks like, sign in to look at these. You don't have to be a developer.
No, they've changed all. Yeah, they've gotten much more open with all of this stuff.
Developer.apple.com/videos, 100 session videos from the conference in all of the different subject matter. So if you want to learn more about developer tools, what's new in LLVM, advanced NS operations, build better apps with CloudKit dashboard, unified logging and activity. This goes pretty deep. Are you watching all of these?
Yeah, I'm working my way through them. I've been watching the design ones. There's a couple of really good ones. The one on macOS dark mode, because you think they just painted everything black, but they really, really didn't. They wanted a black that wasn't too dark, but they also sample your screen. So if your screen is warm or cold, they'll give you a different shade of gray so that it doesn't stand out against your background. And they change button colors and hinting methods. And they make all of these into resources so that developers can specify a light version and a dark version and all of those things. And then they had one on iPhone 10 gestures, and they were showing how it's really completely interruptible. If you launch an app, you can throw it back. If it's the wrong app, you can go immediately sideways and back and forth. And it's just really fun. And I think really accessible sessions to watch because they don't like put a lot of jargon into them. It's really relatable.
I might have to spend a few evenings watching these, 100 of them, though. That's a lot of hours.
So the depth data does look a lot better on 12.
Oh, by the way,
yes.
So before the show, Renee was asking Alex if he'd looked at iOS 12's depth information that they're getting from the camera. And you're using what, Focus, F-O-C-O-S, to look at it.
Yep.
and you just took a picture of me, and you're saying, here, let me show people, because that's creepy.
Way more 3D, and their segmentation mapping is way better. It's
Leo being sucked into the
the vortex.
If you move that little
the slider here, or
that's the slider to what's in focus. But grab that little percentage. There you go.
Oh wow! So you took this. This is basically the picture you took.
Uh huh.
But it has additional depth.
This is how the portrait mode is calculated. Yeah. Leo's being disintegrated.
Prior to 12, it was much flatter than that.
That's good just by itself, yeah, I think. Exactly. Yeah. Wow, that's wild. That is really interesting. So you're saying this is better than
much
11?
Yeah. And it's important because like Google is amazing at segmentation masking. They can take an essentially 2D image and make it look like depth effect just fine. But there's a lot of things that a lot of developers want to do, like that face tracking app. That's just not possible unless you have accurate face measuring and depth data. And once you have that, like, you're entering the AR world already.
Yeah. God, I might just stop the show. Let's just watch some videos. Here's introducing Dark. No, that's very tempting. As you say, Renee, they did a great job shooting these. So they're fun. They're actually like watching a movie.
Yeah,
you could watch them on the big screen.
A ton of skill just watching.
Yeah, yeah. They're not just like a camera locked down in the back.
Yeah,
and only a couple of years ago. I mean, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. They were only showing screens.
Right.
And there was no.
That was crazy. Yeah.
So
and then I've seen Microsoft do the opposite. At Microsoft event, they had the guy Brian with the hat demoing stuff, and all they showed was him going like this the whole time. They never showed the screen.
Right.
So it's hard to get a little bit of both.
One more really good session is Ari Weinstein's Siri Shortcut session, where you can see what the future of workflow holds.
I'm very interested in that.
Because the workflow app is going to become the Shortcuts app, either late in the beta or when the release comes out.
Oh, we suspected that this was workflow that they were using, so they are. And that's interesting. If you have, as I do, the workflow app, I'm sure all of us do on our iPads, it will just turn into Shortcuts at some point.
And you can actually cheat it now. So if you go into workflow and then you go into settings, Siri, it will show you your workflows and you can assign a voice command to them already.
Ooh.
Yeah. Wow. And it's worth pointing out that a lot of people are looking at it and saying, this is really overly complicated and it's automation and no one's going to use it. But it's really best to think about it as two completely separate systems. There is automation for Shortcuts and all the stuff nerds want. But it is going to throw very convenient, like it's like Merlin's old rule. If you do it 5 times, it should be automatic. If you turn on the lock screen, it's going to show you something that you might want to do. You open an app, it's going to show you something. And just hitting that button saves you having to go through, find the app you want, find the setting you want, the tab you want, the feature you want, tap the button, do all those things. It's just one button and it's done. And I think for a lot of people, it'll save them an incredible amount of time, but also save them having to go through so much interface every day.
So I just typed workflow in the search. And there's quite a few videos that include information about workflow. Which one?
You want Siri Shortcuts.
Siri Shortcuts.
Yeah, okay. That's going to be the new name.
Okay, so don't look for workflow. Of course, they wouldn't call it that. They'd call it Siri.
Although it is called Workflow Kit, I think, under the
comments. Is it funny? Siri Shortcuts on Siri Watch Face, building for voice with Siri Shortcuts.
It's the introduction
Shortcuts.
To Siri Shortcuts.
There you go.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Session 211. Oh man, I'm excited. You know what? This is how it should be. Microsoft's done this, and this is what they're famous for: is that they put all of the videos online, and people who can't make it to build get to see everything. I'm glad Apple's now. They used to be like it's all NDA; nobody can know anything.
Right.
And I imagine there's a challenge between telling developers and publicizing new stuff and keeping it.
I think a lot of folks that do conferences worry that people won't show up if the videos are available.
In Apple's case,
Apple does not have that problem.
Or Microsoft's case, or Google's case.
Right.
They just want to get the word out to the largest number of people.
Right.
The issue for Apple, I mean, Google and Microsoft have never held back. Mm-hmm. But the issue for Apple was they always want to keep stuff secret as well. So didn't they used to NDA? They used to NDA everybody who went to
everything
WWDC.
Everything was
NDA.
Yeah.
And there was no press and there was no...
Yeah, they kicked you out after the keynote.
Wasn't a couple... Yeah. More
they
than
still
couple
have some concerns. Like they're worried that if they show... like we see a button in one of these things and that button changes during the beta, you'll be all upset because they took your button away.
Please.
But I think they're just getting used to the fact that things will change and they'll get some heat for it and it's fine.
Whiner's going to whine.
We can't make everybody happy. Yeah.
Whiner's going to whine. Anybody at this point who thinks that what they're seeing in a beta of anything is a commitment, a contract to what you're going to get in the final version is nuts.
Right.
That's not how it works.
I think most developers understand that.
Developers
the other thing
it's
that's
just the
really,
end. It's the it's what it is the people go, I got to have the beta.
Yes.
Aren't developers.
They think it's an early access program and not a developer seed.
Right.
The other thing that was really cool is that there's two Siri Shortcuts has both a new Siri API for intents, but it also works off the old NSActivity API, which is what they used for continuity, like handoff, and also remember this for Siri. So if apps are already using that, you'll see them already in the, if you go to settings, Siri, shortcuts, you'll see them already all available to you. So there's a bunch of stuff in there. And it's nice because that functionality is so convenient. It's what remembers what you're doing in an app. And you basically get it for free now, just with Siri access.
Frederico Vitici, writing in Mac Stories, said the best possible outcome last year, he wrote an article on workflow, the more optimistic outcome envisioned an updated workflow app as a native iOS automation layer. This is last year, deeply integrated with the system and its built-in frameworks. He got exactly what he saw as the best case scenario, right? I mean, this is, and I think you're right. There is that issue of, well, who's going to make shortcuts? But the Siri suggestions kind of do it for you. Am I right, Renee? Yeah.
No, they're push interface. Like for years, we've had to do this pull interface thing where you, again, you go and find the app, you go into the app, you find the tab, you go into the tab, you find the list, you go into the list, you find what you want to do, you tap the button. And that's really non-accessible to a huge percentage of the population. And then we got notifications, which were better, but you tap them and you go to the app and you have to find your way out. Then we got actionable notifications, which are even better because you could like reply inline, but it didn't do very many things and it wasn't really personalized. It was all dependent on a trigger that was someone else sending you something or an alarm going off or a sports score happening. And now it's going to do it. Like I've been using it for 2 weeks and I got a push notification saying your movie pass is on. It looks like you're going into the theater. Do you want to turn on Do Not Disturb? And I'm like, yes,
oh,
I do.
Oh, that's awesome.
And my mom texted me for brunch and it said, looks like you're going to have brunch with your mom. Do you want to do that?
Oh, like, my yes. God. Now, remember, when Google did this with Google Now cards, everybody said, creepy line, creepy line. You think that this isn't going to be the same problem for Apple?
Well, I mean, it's on-device only. If it does any communication with the server, it's end-to-end encrypted. You're assigned an anonymous token, so Apple has no idea who you are or what you're doing. When you restart your phone, that token is reset. So there's multiple layers of anonymity there. They do keep... Some people are worried that Apple is too anonymous, that they lose out on a ton of machine learning opportunities and improvement vectors by not taking any data. But they do preserve like anonymized utterances so they can go back for quality assurance or to improve Siri's understanding of language. All of that stuff they hold on to for a couple months to make sure they improve the system. But there's nothing to tie you to it. So I think one is that as an extension of notifications, people are used to seeing things on their lock screen. They won't find it abnormal. They'll find it convenient. And also, Apple has no business attached to keeping that information. So it doesn't feel like they're using you to get the data.
Okay. One could make the argument that they've kicked the can down the road by just making all the intrusions come from the apps. In other words, the apps know what you're up to. But I guess they would anyway.
Yes.
And there's an interesting thing happening. You described that MoviePass thing. So there's data being combined from the MoviePass app, but also from your GPS in your phone, from your phone itself to deduce.
Well, the MoviePass is triggered. So the MoviePass will be triggered on your lock screen and it will say you're at the movie. And what it's doing now is knowing that you're at the movie, it's offering you Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, but the OS is getting information from the app, but it's also getting information from the app. It has it. You're saying it's just not going to leave your phone.
Yeah, so it always gave you a little bit, like it gave you the pass on your lock screen so you could scan your tickets immediately because that's convenient. Now it's starting to understand that there may be other things related to that would be convenient to you as well.
Okay. And that's
and
an intent.
Device.
That's an intent that MoviePass or whoever the app developer is has to enable.
Yeah, if they have NS activity, I'm forgetting the long name of it, NS user activity, then that a lot of it will be done already. But the intense thing is if you want to create something like Spotify, for example, can create an intent saying your favorite or your most frequent, this is your most frequent playlist, and then you can assign a shortcut to it. And you could say play Spotify and it will play your most popular playlist. Or you can say play my Spotify playlist or play my Spotify workout list, and it can go through and choose different playlists to play for you. So it's basically defining what you can do within an app.
And those updates, they're not going back and talking to Spotify or telling it it's being activated or the MoviePass.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. So it's got advantages and disadvantages. The huge disadvantage is that most services like Alexa and Google Now work on the web level, on the server level, and they interface directly with the API, where Apple's doing it on device, which means that Spotify eventually will have to tell Apple everything that it can do, which is a much more laborious process. Apple prefers it because they want to do on device. They don't want to put all your stuff in the cloud, but we'll see how far every developer is willing to go with that.
I have to admit, I just realized that you can build your own skills on, I mean, I knew that you could do it, but I didn't actually do it on Alexa until this weekend. So you could set up all your own questions with all your own absurd answers It's ours.
And it's pretty smart. Like if you
lumberyard to do that, or
no? There's like an Alexa interface. There's like an Alexa interface. Yeah, they just web page.
They just recently did that.
You know, I got some email, and I was just like, "Oh, I'm gonna check that out."
Routines, yeah.
And you can just start putting in stuff that you want to. You know, if you say
that was the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's
So you didn't miss that much. It just happened.
I know. I felt like, how did I not know about this? I just start throwing this stuff in.
It's also fairly smart because you can, for example, say like in Domino's, get me a pizza hungry, and the Domino's app will go and get you a pizza. And then you install Pizza Hut. It won't let you say pizza hungry again because that's already assigned to Domino's. But you could say Pizza Hut hungry, and then it'll order that for you. And you can overwrite in the beta. I don't know if this will end up, but you can overwrite system things like say, what time is it, and make that order you a pizza. But then if you say, what is the time, it's smart enough to know that you're asking a different question and actually give you the time.
Interesting.
You were so I read the slide at the keynote that they had somewhat backed down on the idea that this whole thing was entirely on the phone. It mostly on the phone was how I read it. There's stuff being sent back to the server. You're saying, though, that it's completely anonymized in every case?
Yeah, so what happens is the minute you engage Siri, it creates an anonymous token for you, and that's wrapped up and sent over HTTPS to Apple, and that's associated for the length of that command string.
But it's associated with your phone.
Whatever it is you're trying to do.
But that association breaks.
They don't
breaks
know it's you
every,
anymore, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And they don't know that it's Leo. They just know it's like user 9753, you know, 5786 asking.
And that is not a persisting association. That goes away.
It persists for a while. I mean, you can kill it anytime you want just by restarting your phone, I believe, but it will persist for a while so that it can put things together for you.
So very few people reboot their phone. So it's going to persist as long as the phone has not been rebooted?
That's my understanding, yeah. And there is one case where Apple used to be, I think, absolutist about privacy, but there's a case where they're going to allow you to share. They've been doing a lot with ResearchKit and HealthKit and now medical records. And they discovered that there are cases where there are people who are participating in research, for example, or receiving after patient care who just can't keep track of their own medication or don't have the ability to use the app, you know, to fill in vast amounts of things into the app. So if you give them express permission, they'll sort of intermediate that for you and take the data that's coming from health records and feed it into research, into whatever ResearchKit app you have or whatever care kit. Service your institution is providing.
Okay.
So in that case, it's against their normal privacy policy, but they think the benefits to the user far exceed what their privacy policy means.
Yeah, a lot of this is also in reteaching the AI model that's powering all this so that the feature gets better for everybody. So by communicating anonymized data back up to the server, at some point the server can push down a smarter version of that model. So it's better at scheduling things. It's better at figuring out where you are and what you're likely to do in that place. So Apple seems to be looking for a really good happy medium between the limitations of doing everything on device, even anonymized, and the power, again, not just to the user, but basically to the feature itself, to making sure that if your phone learns something, it can teach that thing to everybody else's phone.
You have a whole article on so much more than the keynote. It says WWDC 2018, and this is a great.
This is kind of
a lot of this though is like Renee's excellent adventure.
Yeah, no, I did another one called Five Things That Apple Didn't Announce But Were Really Big. Like they have MapKit.js, which is the entirety of Apple Maps, available now online, and they're available cheaper. Right now, at least, than Google Maps are. And they're all written in WebGL, so they're super fast, and they have layers for interactivity. And
available
for,
to who? Who would use that? Developers?
Developers, who want to put them either on a website or into an app. Because app tiles are, as people who've been trying to use them for games and things know, they can get stupid expensive really, really fast, especially as your user base scales. So they basically they took all of Apple Maps, and it had been available in small scales inside Apple's website and inside the WWDC app, for example, but now it's available to everybody.
At no cost?
It's cheap. It's not free. I think there probably is a free tier, but it's way less expensive. There's a huge amount of impressions that you get for free, and then if you want to go over those, you can contact Apple, and I believe the pricing now is still substantially cheaper than what Google is offering.
That's probably smart, and I presume it has Apple. Oh, yeah, it does. It has a little Apple in the lower left-hand corner, so there's a little Apple branding on there, which is smart, because Google gets its brand out everywhere. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, and there were a couple of things that just, there was just such a big show that a couple of things that Apple just didn't announce that were still, I thought, super interesting in general. Like they, even like Face ID on the iPhone 10 now, it doesn't revert you to just the PIN code immediately. You can swipe up over and over again to make it retry as much as you want to.
Oh, thank God. Because I have a 20-character password, and it's a pain in the, right. You know what.
Yeah, they fixed a lot of things that were also, instead of having to hold down and get the little X to kill an app, you can just swipe that app away like you were always... Like could previously, yeah, and you always should have been able to do.
Yeah.
And you can say, Siri, turn on the flashlight finally if you're in a dark room.
Oh, that's good.
Hands aren't free. There's a bunch of stuff in there that I think is, there's not everything. Like there's a bunch of stuff they still haven't done. But I think in whole, iOS 12 and Mojave are looking really good.
You say
watchOS.
Fewer accidental screenshots on the iPhone 10.
That's now. I think they put that
if
in
you're on the beta, yeah.
As well.
Yeah, if you're on the beta.
Yeah, so... This never happened to me because I guess because my hand isn't really long enough to go all the way to the top of the phone.
Happens to
I
me turn off all the time.
I mistake the camera for the off button, and I keep turning off the camera when I want to use it. That's my biggest.
I do that all the time. Like it's just like you go to take this perfect picture, and you're like, then you take it, and then it goes off. Camera comes off. You're like,
yeah. But a lot of people they when they pull out of their pocket, they squeeze both and take a screenshot. So now for the first few seconds, when it detects it's just starting up, it will prevent you from taking any screenshots.
Nice. That's very good. That's great. This is good. This is exciting. I have to say, the Siri Shortcuts makes iOS 12 extremely interesting to me.
Yeah,
it could. Yeah. This is a lot of what they're doing. I mean, you could get all excited about Memojis, although a lot of what they're doing is catch up to stuff that's out there or stuff you see on stacking notifications been on Android. Mm. But you know the Do Not Disturb features will be on Android as well. But I think Siri Shortcut is unmatched. And on any platform. And I think that it, you can run a program called Tasker and automate your Android device at great effort.
Right.
You can do a lot of stuff, almost anything. But the way they've implemented Siri Shortcuts is, to me, extremely impressive. I can't wait to try it. And I have a feeling it might be enough to push iOS over the top for me.
I think that what Apple does really well is we'll create something new out of something old by just adding a little bit more thought.
Yeah, design.
Like a design, and he's like, yeah. Like I looked at the FaceTime, during the keynote, the new FaceTime with 32 people or whatever, and I was like, that is the craziest design I've ever seen. I was like, I do not like that design at all, but I was like, but I know they spent a lot of time on it, so I have a feeling that I'm going to put it on and go, okay, it's kind of cool, but it's not how I.
Well, that's a perfect example because they're duplicating Hangouts or House Party.
Right,
it's not functionality nobody's had before, but it definitely looks different because of the fade in and out.
And the reason it's 32 people is because that's the limit of iMessage, and they never wanted you to say iMessage. Oh, we can only fit two less people.
Why max it out? Why not max it out?
We have to drop you.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, I think there's just like UI considerations there. But the cool thing is like those bubbles and things really move well, and they did like acceleration and deacceleration curves, so loud people wouldn't pop too aggressively. Yeah. I wish if someone was a troublemaker, you could pop their bubble and send them back to the staging ground at the bottom, but it doesn't.
Fast
and a lot of feedback we got is that people love that you could like put on an effect. So if you were woken up by a meeting, you could actually put on a fake face and not have to worry about
it. I like that. I really liked it. I thought it was really cool that Memojis can be used in the real world.
And they look so good.
Well, I mean,
they do.
We're going to be tired of them. Don't worry.
Jim Dalrymple filed an angry radar that the beards weren't long enough. I think he and ZZ Top are the only ones who duped that radar.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
I think the next feature for it is going to be so that like you can be in the middle of a chat and either because you're not really paying attention or because like your camera and the screen are like off in a different way, you can be like just basically looking at your phone, checking messages, but your face is still going, I'm paying attention. Yes, of course. Really?
And the performance stuff was legit. I mean, they took some of the best engineers who were working on core parts of UIKit, and they got them all to optimize it to make sure that tasks weren't being executed concurrently if they didn't have to make sure that things were moved to different parts of the process if they could be, to make sure the processor ramped up as fast as possible to deliver UI as fast as it could. So I put it on my 6 Plus, and it's amazing how perceptibly faster it is.
Do we know when iOS 12 beta will be publicly available?
Before the end of the month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pretty soon then. Well, they just pushed out beta 3 of 11.4.1. Right? So that just came out today.
And the developer beta 2 just came out right before the show.
Okay. So soon.
Yeah.
Public beta 3.11.4.1. So maybe there'll be one more public beta, and then the public 12. Because I want to play
remind-
with this.
Yeah. As a little reminder, I mean, the iOS 12 beta is remarkably solid for a beta, but it's still a beta. And I've had things like video features disappear until I rebooted three times. So if you really depend on your phone, wait for that public beta.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I'm not. Oh, no, that's me. I'm not. I'm on the public beta track, not on the private beta. Developers.
Let's just say I use my other phone, my older phone, for any kind of GPS.
Yeah. I only have one iPhone. Unlike you, I have just the one.
I have a couple. Well, I have different, because we stream, I cover all the services. And so I have a phone that's T-Mobile, a phone that's AT&T, and then I just have, and then my Android phone is Verizon. So
somebody in the chat room says the rumor is tomorrow will be iOS 12 public beta.
I would not get my hopes up.
That seems a little soon if they've just put out.
It has sometimes followed the second developer beta, so it's not an entirely impossible situation, but my feeling is that it's going to take a little while longer.
And how is it on the iPad?
It's good. It's weird because, like, I feel like they maybe shouldn't have done all those new gestures last year if they're just going to overwrite them with the iPhone 10 gestures this year. Because I got so confused the first day trying to do basic gesture navigation on it. Because now it works like an iPhone 10.
Oh, actually, so, I'm glad because I could never figure out the iPad gestures.
I mean, good. That's good.
They should, they need to unify it. They've got to unify it.
I agree, but they did an intermediary step. If they had just not done that step and gone straight to this, it's like they're trolling me with this gap between iPhone and iPad, like buttons in different places and UI gestures being different. It's like a giant troll every year. But we're probably going to switch from, because we use Skype and Hangouts for our podcast now, and I think we'll switch to FaceTime.
Oh, really?
As soon as we can record it. It looks so fun, and you can, I know there's a lot of stuff you can do in Hangouts, but it's always like a web interface, and Alex has said this before, but like I feel like every three times we use it, they've moved some of the interface, and we panic and can't find a basic function that we've been relying on. And this, at least, I feel like it'll be more limited than Hangouts, but we'll know exactly what we're getting every week and what we need to record with.
Somebody told me that if you've got the developer betas turned on for your Apple Watch, walkie-talkie has just been pushed out.
Ooh.
I haven't updated. That is cool, too, because that uses the FaceTime protocol, so it's end-to-end encrypted.
Oh, well, I did not know that. That's very cool. It's just it's just audio, though.
Yeah, it's like push-to-talk FaceTime, basically, FaceTime audio, basically.
I like
that. But it's only just point-to-point, right? Just two people can do it. Or is it can you build a PL?
See, that's interesting. I don't know because I haven't been able to test it yet, but we'll try that. I don't know if it works for groups. I know it's person to person.
Yep.
But I don't know if it's person to group, which would be handy at Disneyland.
Yeah. Meet me at Mickey's hideout.
Okay, Splash Mountain. No, Mickey's hideout. I said deploy.
That is smart. A lot of people actually, families own like a FRS band.
Yeah,
exactly. Because it's so much easier, so much faster, so much reliable than using phones. Also, you're not going to get pop-up notifications on a $30 FRS radio.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, please.
I was just going to say there was one last thing that really impressed me that they didn't announce, and that is live listening for AirPods. So instead, like they've worked for hearing aids for years, you've been able to do this, but hearing aids, not everybody can afford them. Not everybody needs them all the time. So you can put, if you go into Control Center, you can add a button that's called live listening. And then you open Control Center, you press that button, and whatever sound your iPhone microphone is picking up is live streamed to your AirPods. So if you're having trouble hearing the TV, you can put it next to the TV. If you're in a lecture hall and you can't hear the lecturer, you can put it there. If you just need an emergency baby monitor while you're in the kitchen, you could put it on the, you know, next to the baby crib. And then walk to the kitchen, and you'll hear everything through your AirPods as it's happening.
That's going to be huge. That's going to
the accessibility community loved that.
Oh,
yeah.
Thrilled! And it's not just accessibility. I think a lot of people will like that.
People were nervous saying it's remote spying, but like you've had remote camera on your watch for a while, and you've like 10 times zoom to read lips across the street. Like you can misuse anything. But the amount of people who were hard of hearing who just loved this on announcement was spectacular.
Yeah. Actually, they have a lot of new features coming to the iPhone that are pretty exciting. They've said that in the next, I'm not sure when this will happen, but maybe even in the next beta, they're going to have the Lightning port disable after your screen has.
Sounds like after 1 hour.
Off for an hour. Yeah.
Which I thought made more, way more sense. I think the first time I heard it was going to be a week or a couple days or something like that. But 1 hour seems like the right.
Perfect, right?
Yeah, and they say they can already circumvent that, but you know, it's hard to tell anymore what's real and what's fake with those companies.
Somebody said, oh, we can hack that. The reason is, of course, to defeat Cellebrite and other companies that are designed, have hardware designed to plug into the Lightning port and take all the data out of the phone.
I'm just curious how they're going to defeat the fact that they can't get in.
Well, they did. Their comment wanted the listener to believe that they have an underlying technology that renders a specific counterattack blunted. They're trying to say not that, oh, we found this one weird trick that so long as Apple doesn't close it off, well, we'll be able to do this. The message they were trying to say, underscore, is that they had found something fundamental that it doesn't matter if Apple tries to patch it, which would imply like some sort of a hardware hack that they found. But like Renee says, realize that they are having a banner 2018 selling these devices from $15,000 to $30,000 to everybody to every law enforcement agent that wants to have them. So the very first thing you want to do is get out in front and say, don't worry, whatever you have, you will still be able to break into people's phones. So I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical that they found something that
good. It is possible that they found some way, based on just like the splinters of things that they've said, it sounds like they try to put their own software on the device that renders aspects of so we all know Springboard, but before Springboard loads, before you type in your password for the first time, you're in preboard, which is sort of a more secure state of iOS that requires you to put in your passcode. And it sounds like they found some way to interfere with that layer and remove a lot of the restrictions that usually stop you from like locking out after too many fake passcodes. And the same exploit might work to stop them from turning off the Lightning port. We just don't know, because again, you can't trust anything they say.
This is Gray Shift, which is one of the companies that's selling these USB.
I'm kind of surprised Apple hasn't just said, hey, this is your $500 million day. Let me just suck you in.
Yeah.
hire you as an expert.
Well, the other thing is that there is no indication that they can still work around a long passcode. So if you just go from a four, the people who still are relying on 4-digit and 6-digit like zip codes, those are the people who are universally screwed always. But if this is the time you decide to say that, guess what, the poem that I was forced to memorize in fifth grade that I've never forgotten, guess what, the first five words of that poem that I will never forget as long as I live, that's going to be my passcode, given that I've got given that you've got fingerprint ID and face ID and you probably only have to type it in maybe once every 3 or 4 days, that's probably going to be the safest way around this.
Gray Shift's device brute forces the code, but they have two strategies. One is BFU and one is AFU. Before first unlock is a slow brute force, 10 minutes per try. Well, good luck if you've got 10,000 choices.
Right.
That gives access to limited data. That's when the phone is off, you know, when the cops get it whoever gets it. But then the AFU is a fast brute force that kicks in when the phone is locked but was turned on and unlocked at some point by the owner. In this case, it allows for 300,000 tries and parallel extraction of pre-unlocked data. So those would both be defeated by this Lightning port fix, which is apparently already in the current beta, 11.4.1b and 12b. And then if they get around it, if you have a long, strong password, not a 4-digit code, they're not going to be able to force it at all.
Also, this isn't like some of the hacks they've got going for Android devices where they're inexpensive enough to deploy and fast enough and easy enough that a lot of departments are using the idea that if you have given me permission to search your car and your phone is inside your car, that means I have permission to search your phone. They might have a box back at their squad car that will be able to just say, well, maybe we probably won't be able to crack this phone in less than 3 minutes, but let's just plug it in anyway as a matter of course. This isn't that sort of a thing. It's still really complicated. It's still very, very expensive. It's not so affordable that they would have it on like a car by car as opposed to a department by department thing. And for the most part, he said, italicizing that phrase, law enforcement has had the position that they don't use these devices for just fishing expedition sort of searches. It really is when They feel it's basically a departmental resource, and they don't have the resources to simply send lots of phones there just as a matter of course. It's a selective sort of thing. But again, that's an italicized sort of thing. The crackers that work on Android are a much bigger problem. This is more of a, again, easy, expensive to use, maybe not even going to work, not so foolproof that they would want to use it on every single device after determining that, no, we didn't get in the first 5 minutes. So, but still something that I'm sure the engineers at Apple who have bought them through three layers of shell companies are having a good time tearing this thing apart.
If you go into your phone, if you have the beta on it, if you go into your phone, I'm on my iPhone 10, so it says Face ID and passcode. Older phones and iPads will say Touch ID and passcode. And you scroll down under Allow Access When Locked, there's this setting for USB accessories. And if correct me if I'm wrong, if I have this turned off, that means that USB accessories will not be able to. It says unlock phone to allow USB accessories to connect when it has been more than an hour since your phone was locked. So if it's been more than an hour, having this turned off protects me. Is that right? Am I in the right? Is my setting correct?
Yeah.
It's not immediately clear, but I think the idea is have that off, not on.
Some people get nervous, but there is a setting that says erase your phone after 10 tries. And people are like, oh, my kid's going to do it and I'll lose my phone, or my jerk friend at the bar is going to put it in. But the amount of delays that pile up after the fourth and fifth and sixth attempt, I think it takes 3 or 4 hours to actually get to 10 attempts. So you are really safe leaving that on. There is nobody in your life who is going to do that to you unless they really want to cause problems.
I know my turn that on. I have two iPads sitting in my office right now that have to go to the Apple store because they won't unlock for 64 years or something like that.
What did you do, Alex?
My kids were trying to log into it.
Unless you're Alex's kids.
The other thing is if you have a backup, which you should have, of your phone and the data gets erased, you can restore it, right?
Yep.
Now, let me ask you this question. And this comes up because Paul Manafort is in jail right now because he used iCloud to back up his phone, and it turned out he backed up his WhatsApp messages, and there was a smoking gun in there.
A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. And when you know that WhatsApp encrypts your messages end to end, but you don't know that iCloud backups are stored unencrypted, well.
Oops.
And that contrary to what the Department of Justice says, Apple is very much willing to help out law enforcement if they come to them with the appropriate paperwork for iCloud.
So here's my question, though. If Manafort had checked the box that says encrypt the backup, would Apple then be still able to hand that iCloud backup to law enforcement or no?
So my understanding is that Apple defaults to fail safe for backups, not to fail secure, because they believe that the biggest problem people face is losing their photos or losing their documents or losing their returns.
Yes.
If you really want security, they encourage you to connect to iTunes, do a secure backup locally on device. The cloud thing is meant to be like a brainless.
So
like
all just iCloud backups are unencrypted. There's nothing you can do about that.
They're encrypted to Apple, not through Apple.
Yes.
So
it's not trust no one. Apple has the keys. Yeah,
no one can intercept them while you're sending them to Apple, but they are stored on Apple servers. And Apple's policy is, you know, we don't want to have any more of your data than we absolutely have to, because we don't want to ever have to turn it over. But this is you saying we want to back up our stuff, and we're going to keep it safe and secure for you. But it's on our servers now, and if someone gives us a warrant, we have to turn that over.
So not to help criminals by any means.
No.
But for your own personal use, if you want to be fully secure, don't back up your iOS devices to iCloud. Back them up locally.
Or be selective. Like turn on iCloud Photo Library and turn off what, because you can choose on an app-by-app basis what gets backed up. So you can go and turn off WhatsApp and turn off anything that you want to
but
keep.
I turn
even
off
iMessage.
I turn off backup to iCloud and for the general thing, because I don't want to waste iCloud space. I have a lot more hard drive space locally. So I don't back up to iCloud. It's convenient, but it's not secure.
Yeah.
And
it's
then,
especially good for people who forget to do their backups.
Yeah, it's convenient, not secure, not cheap either, because you have to pay for the storage. If you're going to back it up to your local drive, though, do turn on encrypted backups. Use a good password. Use File Vault. Turn that on. And then I saw somebody recommending, I'm not sure, this is a Black Diamond tip, recommending a firmware password as well on your Apple. That way they can't take the hard drive out. I think if you have File Vault on, you're probably fully encrypted.
They can't take it. It's there, but I've never heard anybody say it really improves your security by using it. The encryption thing is really nice, though, in the iTunes backup, because then it stores all your passwords and stuff. And when you restore, you don't have to go through every app. And some of them might disappear because the tokens expire. But mostly you'll get a lot of your passwords and account information back.
So this is an article on iMore from 3 years ago, but I think it's still good. Peter Cohen wrote, How to Set Your Mac's Firmware Password and Why You Shouldn't.
Peter knows his Macs.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know what? For some people, this is something to keep in mind. I think if you're
some businesses mandate it, like some of your employers might mandate it.
I do this on Windows machines. But if you're using BitLocker on Windows machines or File Vault on Macintosh, no hacker is going to be able to get your data out of there unless he gets your login.
Yeah.
So depending on how secure you want it to be. But yeah, backup locally, then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. Or like, again, if you are nervous about things like your family photos, because it would literally cause a divorce
if anything happened. I do the iCloud photo library, do the music library, do anything
that you don't care about.
Right.
Or that's more important to be safe than to be secure.
Who cares if the feds get my photos or my music? I think they'll enjoy my music.
Oh, the points playlist is on point.
the other thing that they've done, which is pretty exciting, it might save your life. But I have some questions about this. They're going to start offering GPS coordinates, high-resolution GPS coordinates to 911 calls on your iPhone. Right?
Yeah, I didn't look too much into that, but by law, they have to do a lot of stuff for 911, and I think they're improving the quality.
This is something new. Okay, good. So this is something in iOS 12 that Apple put out a press release, automatically will share your iPhone location during 911 calls. The issue, Apple calls it Apple's Hybrid Emergency Location System, or HELO. That was launched in 2015.
Yep.
And if your 911 center supports HELO, that will help get help to you faster. But Apple says that they're going to do something that will build on that to make it even better. So I'm not immediately clear, but automatic.
They have a whole bunch of, like, they're doing those things. Like, for a while now, they've done the thing where you hold down the buttons, it'll make a 911 call for you.
Right.
And I think their point is that if you're in an accident and you only have your watch on you, you only have your phone on you, they want to be able to get emergency services to you as fast as possible.
And I was surprised that I should have known this, but I didn't know that 911 responders are generally trained to, If you call and say you want a pizza, they'll start asking you questions that only require yes and no answers.
Yes.
Yep. You know, and so, you know, that kind of is a way to, and especially combined with GPS, it's useful to be able to tell them exactly where you are and you're in trouble.
And of course, many of the times you can place the call, but you can't talk. You're having a heart attack. You can't talk. Mm-hmm. You can't talk because there's other people in the room.
Right.
Holding a gun to your head. But the idea of course, getting first responders there faster also has to do with the fact that a cell phone isn't where always at home. It's not like a landline.
Right.
And it uses E911. I know the FCC has mandated location information. And I think as of a couple of years ago, they want to get it pretty accurate.
Yeah. They have there's E911, which you probably heard of. There is phase one, and now there's phase two rules that basically says that if a 911 dispatch center tells a carrier, like a local carrier, like Verizon or AT&T, that, hey, look, we want really, really fine grained results, they have to be able to, within 6 months, they have to comply with that and start providing that information. When Apple announced this, I was trying to figure out what exactly they were talking about. Because that sort of hits the wall of my understanding of the E911 system, where it will give in that it's designed to give you it's designed to allow the carriers to provide information up to the limits of what the onboard GPS can provide. However, given that we've got so much beacon information, both Google and Apple Maps are trying to figure out if you're inside a mall, what floor of the mall are you on, what store are you in, or if more importantly, if you're in an apartment building. Again, what apartment are you in? What place are you in? I'm trying to figure out how they might be conveying that information to a 911 dispatcher. But as Alex said, they've got so many rules at dispatch, including a lot of us have at some point accidentally tapped the wrong speed dial button on a parent's phone, and then everything's fine. But nonetheless, we get some rollers coming about 5 minutes later because they have to check it out if they have the manpower.
This is from Apple's press release. The FCC requires carriers to locate callers to within 50 meters at least 80% of the time by 2021, so a couple of years, 3 years from now.
Yep.
iOS location services are capable of exceeding this requirement today, even in challenging dense urban environments. This new feature allows Apple to make these benefits available to local 911 centers now rather than years from now. It uses something called Rapid SOS, which is another company's system. Apparently, it's widely used in 911 centers' existing software. And so if they're using Rapid, if they have Rapid SOS capability, they'll get highly accurate location information
from
your phone.
And most likely this accuracy is going to skyrocket when 5G comes out, because 5G is much smaller cells. So, 5G cell, from my understanding, only goes about 250 feet. So, so instead of one big cell tower that's covering a big open area, you've got lots of these little transceivers that are going to be spread out like seeds. And because of that, they're going to be able to, the 5G network will know where you are down
much
to
better.
A couple meters. Oh, maybe
that's better than you do.
That's good. Yeah. So this is, as you said, Andy, it's not immediately clear how widespread, how many people are using Rapid SOS, how widespread this will be. The problem with regional centers, which is what E911 uses, is that they then have to hand you off to a local 911. Yep. Hmm. So that's less useful. So I'm not sure how much this will help, but anything that does that improves the response time for a 911 call, of course, is going to save lives. Earlier today on iOS Today, Megan said that, what did she say? With a 1 minute improvement in response time will save 10,000 lives a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a significant difference.
And it really does point out how important getting these better fine-grained maps are. Google was talking recently about the difficulty of not just making sure they have a street address, but figuring out through street map car, 3D photographs, and basically cell phone use tracking, where is the entrance to this building?
Yes,
because
right.
you can be at the right address, but you have to go. But you're like two stoplights away from actually figuring out how to get inside this building. And that is a problem for 911 as well as pizza delivery.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country. Rated number one online mortgage lender by Inside Mortgage Finance. Number one in your hearts, too, according to J.D. Power. Number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years running. And now number one in volume. Quicken Loans is going to get bigger still because of this Rocket Mortgage. Because it's something we geeks love. The idea that instead of going to a bank to get a loan, taking days, weeks, months, you can get a loan on your phone in minutes by going to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Rocket Mortgage makes it simple, fast, in most cases under 10 minutes. You'll understand every step of the way. You'll know exactly what your down payment, you get to set it, your down payment, your rate, your term, and then you can mortgage with confidence. I mean, it's crazy that we've had to do it any other way. This is the 21st century. Let's have a technologically sophisticated way to apply for a home loan. We've got it now, rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. So fast you could do it at an open house on your phone. You can do it on your PC or your tablet, too, if you want. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Whether you're refinancing or buying, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank him so much for... I'm sorry about the Cleveland Cavaliers, Dan. but we are happy that you support our podcast still. I probably shouldn't rub salt in the wound, should I? Apple, this is really surprising. Apple has decided that sitting is the new cancer. as we all sit... And they are going to provide standing desks to every employee at the brand new Apple Park.
Well, the good news is that they aren't like forced to stand. It is an adjustable stand or sit desk. So I guess that's kind of okay. But the medical science on this has been backing down from the idea of sitting as the new cancer. That moderate activity kind of counteracts it, although there are health risks involved with sitting all the time. I think that all you got to do is make sure that there's like really, really inexpensive vending machines on every floor. People will get up from time to time and prevent blood clots. That's the easiest way to deal with it, I think.
We offer our employees standing desks, too, because we don't want them to get cancer of the butt or whatever it is. This comes from an interview Tim did with Bloomberg with David Rubenstein. He says, we have given all of our employees 100% standing desks. If you could stand for a while, then sit and so on and so forth. It's much better for your lifestyle. Cook previously described sitting as the new cancer. This was when he was talking about the Apple, really, because of that stand thing in the Apple Watch. I mean, right. Apple really has a thing about sitting.
Well, they also have the Deepak Chopra, the Deepak Breathe app on the watch.
Yeah.
Which is
silly.
Not a bad idea, but I don't sure if I need to have something
George's
that's endorsed.
Favorite by app.
Yeah. Yeah, George, of course, would love it. Here's a picture of the way these work. So this was built in when they built Apple Park. There are buttons underneath, and you can raise it and lower it, and it's pretty cool.
I did a series of podcasts for a while with a guy who was a physiotherapist who he founded some postural therapy system. And the very first one he wanted to do was standing desks. And he said, basically, if you're sitting down all the time, it's like being in outer space. Your muscles are atrophying. You've got all this body structure that for years was designed to keep you up and to press against gravity. And all of that goes away when you're sitting. So the best thing you can do is just get up and sit and walk and do all these things.
Move around.
And we don't. Yeah. So I'm a huge fan of this. Like, obviously, work your way up to it. I've used standing desks for over a decade. Don't go all in on it. And you can increase the intensity by putting uneven surfaces underneath where you stand. So you're forced to balance yourself while you do it. You can take it overboard. My boss, Kevin, has a treadmill desk where you're standing up on the treadmill.
That's going way too far. I'm sorry.
You use it for conference calls. You can't type on it yet. But it's just, I mean, the idea is that obstacle courses are like the best thing you can do. Go to the park. Watch kids. Kids are like amazing at this. They never stop. They're always in motion. They're climbing. They're exploring. They're moving. They're running. They're just not sitting. And it's so much better for you. Sorry, I'm really passionate about this.
If sitting is the cancer, I sit on a ball. So I probably just, I don't have cancer. I just have hemorrhoids. I don't know. But that's kind of the same thing, right? I'm moving a little bit. I'm not.
You're forced to stabilize. But it's really like the muscles in your legs.
I notice when I go to my trainer, he's always saying, oh, your hips are out of alignment. You've been sitting all day again. They really
do. Your wallet?
No, I don't sit on my wallet. I'm not that stupid.
I got rid of my wallet. Related.
Because mine's really thick, and I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Well, my solution is I'm sitting on it right now. I bought like an actual, like at a thrift store, like a middle school, like sort of like steel chair. I don't know what you'd recognize it immediately if I showed it to you. And it's just comfortable enough that it's comfortable to sit in while I work and type, but it's not padded. There's nothing there's nothing padded, so I'm not encouraged to sit in it for more than an hour at a time. It gets a little bit. I'm usually, you can on the video feed, you can sometimes see me like shifting a little in the chair. So I'm always moving a little bit, and there after like an hour and a half, I'm not in pain. I just feel like walking, getting up, and walking around for a little bit. So there are a lot of different ways to. Well, I have tried standing desks. I just get so distracted by the. I just don't like them for some reason.
The other thing Apple did is they didn't. Johnny Ive didn't want to have the chairs be too comfortable.
Yeah.
So that you'd be more likely to get up and move around. So instead of using the Aeron chairs that every high tech company uses, they got these chairs from Vitra that are only $1,000 that are. More like living room chairs and less
the Pacific.
I'm not sure which one they got here.
They also have a lot of Hiroshima chairs, the wooden ones.
Hiroshima chairs?
Yeah, if you search for it, they're the ones you see in the cafeterias and all the conference rooms, and they're really beautiful single. They look like single piece of wood carvings.
Ah.
They go with their fancy tables.
So if so.
So basically the ultimate ideal for them is to go get those chairs that are in like some of those McDonald's where the seat leans a little bit forward so that you really don't want to sit there for more than 25 minutes.
Actually,
and you want to
leave. I thought they'd be horrible, but the last event, we were all sitting there afterwards for so long. It must have been like 4 or 5 hours, and I didn't notice I was in a wooden chair. I thought it'd be the worst thing in the world, but it was...
They don't look that comfortable, I have to say. Is that
No,
them?
They look horrible. Yeah, that's them. They look horrible, but they're actually really comfortable.
See, I thought they were pretty.
They're pretty.
Yeah, I mean...
But they look very hard.
And the other problem is that when you have like these really highly like cushioned engineered chairs, the cushioning breaks down, the springs like stretch out, and suddenly
it's so true, yeah.
And after a couple of years, it really is kind of bad for you. Whereas the one thing that the chair I'm in has is just has the it has like the back piece is kind of like almost exactly in the middle, like sortly lower my back. So that's where like it gets really, really comfortable. Like it also puts me in the mind of being in English class and, you know, leaning way back to hear that little crack.
Yes.
So which one, wait a minute, which one should we get? Should we get one with a cushion or is that too posh?
They don't have the cushions. No, they don't. There's no cushions.
There's no cushions on the Apple ones?
No.
So that would be probably Hiroshima 2955 / 31.
That looks like it.
I'm just.
That like Captain Raymond Holtz.
You can get it in beech. Oak or walnut? What should we get? Walnut? Ooh. That wouldn't be good for tabletop slingshotting, though.
No.
Rose gold. No. Rose gold.
Rose gold. Wow.
Coat jacket. Is this a police precinct?
I'm curious. They don't have a price on here, but you got to think $1,000 easy, right?
If you can get them. I mean, I'm sure they're not that easy. You can't just walk into Walmart and pick those up.
Wow.
All right. I bet Alibaba will sit you up.
I just wonder, like, you Apple walks in and goes, yes, thank you. We'll take 10,000. What? Wait, we only ever sold 30.
Yeah. In our whole lives.
10,000, please. Yeah.
Speaking of new design on the Apple Store orders page.
Hmm.
Oh. So go out and buy a HomePod just to see what it looks like.
Arrived in Canada yesterday.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now
it's not
too
available in Canadian French yet. Womp.
How much is it in Canada?
$450 Canadian, which I think is like, what, $25 US? I don't remember.
What is the... That's interesting. $450, so it's $50 more. That's not too bad. Let me see.
And what I didn't know, but I should have suspected, is that Apple has Apple Music editors in every country, and they're staging them with a HomePod layout. So there's like an Apple Music team in Quebec who's like going to Shibugamu and Shawinigan and Richmond, Vancouver, and finding the hot local bands and making sure they feature them and work with them and try to help them make playlists for them and feature sections for them. So they get like this whole local feel built around the product launch.
This is a little new too in the... In the store, they're now featuring a user, a photographer, right on the front page there of the store.
That's the new Behind the Mac campaign they launched. I forget when they launched that. That was like last Friday, something
Peter
like that.
Kariuki, he's a developer from Rwanda, Alex. Rwandan developer.
Musician. You go to apple.com / Grimes. YouTube.
Yeah. Elon Musk's girlfriend. She must be hip. Elon dated her, and now she's on the front page of Apple Store. Must be hip.
They have a video that shows all of them. If you go to youtube.com/Apple, they have a new behind the... It's their effort to put some love back in the app marketing cycle.
Let me buy a MacBook Air and just see what the new experience is like. It looks the same so far, right?
Like a fourth generation Intel processor.
I know. You know, I actually... we have a couple, and I just want to get one with ports, but... The screen, I can't, you know, it's just...
No, it scratches your eyes.
It hurts my eyes. Yeah, I can't get such a low-res screen. It's noticeably low-res. It looks blurry.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is different. This looks exactly the same to me, but apparently it's redesigned somehow.
Yeah. That's problematic. I actually reactivated a phone from like 5 years ago for various reasons. It was like my last pre Retina display, and I'm like, my God, Apple still sells a laptop with exactly this kind of display.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay,
yeah.
This is
well, September.
Yeah,
maybe September we'll love again.
Apple Camp reservations opening up if you want to go to camp this summer.
So good.
Oh, how exciting. Apple opens up summer 2018 Apple Camp reservations. They opened them up yesterday. It's an annual retail program aimed at teaching kids while exposing them and their parents to Apple products. U.S., Canada, France, several other countries. Sessions begin July 9th and cycling through July 27th. Program limited to kids 8 to 12.
Last year, the
Did
year
you?
Before.
Did they like
yeah,
it?
Yeah, they had a lot of fun.
They learned there was an iMovie and a GarageBand track, and they tried both of them, and they ended up making movies. And they still make them to this day. I mean, they still sit there, and they make stop-motion animation.
I think
and my youngest godson just figured out that with the new version of Pages, because it's object-oriented, you can draw something and then circle the parts you want to move and screen record and make like these whole animated stories just inside.
So there's coding with Sphero robots.
Yeah.
As a final project, the kids will design their own games. Beat making and songwriting with GarageBand. That sounds pretty cool. And telling stories with clips. Instead of iMovie, they're going to do clips to combine media into exciting videos. Now, it's free, but the slots fill up fast. So parents, if you want to, I think this would be a great thing for a kid 8 to 12.
And yeah, for absolutely. Adults, I think they're doing prototyping. They're going to start offering prototyping design courses, which is pretty cool.
What about us? What about the 60 to 80 set? When do we get
totally ignored, Leo?
When do we get some classes?
No, as soon as that prototyping class is up, I'm going to go try it because I've seen the prototyping workshops at WWC and they're amazing.
Prototyping what?
Courses. Like, so one of the ones I saw was they were trying to make a toaster app and they were showing you how they used Keynote to mock up the interface and then
neat.
Had someone behind a couch pushing up the toaster so you could feel like how the interaction would be when you're actually pressing the app.
How fun. That's really cool.
Yeah, they have a really cool prototyping team. You can find some of the old Dub Dub sessions. They're really fun to watch.
Apple being fined in Australia for the Error 53 controversy. This was the issue that if you had a third party repair your iPhone, you'd get an Error 53. Apple said that's for security reasons because we can't be sure that the phone is still secure once the Touch ID has been replaced. Apparently, there's a violation of Australian law. In fact, in June of last year, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission had an undercover operation. 13 calls with Apple retailers in Australia, and they recorded Apple representatives saying that Apple did not have a responsibility to remedy faulty iPhones if you had it repaired by an unauthorized third party. Apple's admitted to it, and they're being fined relatively paltry $6.8 million, $9 million Australian dollars.
Good. Don't give people bad information.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like how can a, you know, once you have an unauthorized party mess with a piece of electronics, I don't understand how the company is still accountable for.
Well, I guess I don't think it is in the U.S., but
because it's silly.
Well, so apparently it is. Like,
you
don't
need some Yahoo says they can fix your phone and then they break it. How is the manufacturer accountable for that? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, they're not. They weren't saying that you have to replace the really bad screen that is the incompatible screen that was drawing too much voltage. They're basically saying that if in that situation, if it could be fixed by replacing it with a new screen, yes, you can. Yes, the customer will have to pay for that repair, but you can't simply say that this phone is absolutely a dead phone to us. We will never fix it. It will never work again. We will never touch it again. There is sort of it just underscores that there is an obligation to not be utsy about this, not be cute and adorable about this, and say that if you ever take this anywhere else but an authorized service center, you will never be able to get it fixed by a legit service center ever again, and that's unnecessary and ridiculous.
And I'm used to professional equipment is that way. So my world is you touch. There's little stickers on some of our equipment. You break that sticker, and they will never look at it. You know, so I'm used to like that is so normal to me.
A lot of government, it makes sense from a company point of view because like they're risk adverse and they think that if you screw to that phone, they have never know the full depth of your screen with that phone, and they'll replace that screen and then you'll come back with something else, and now they're on the hook because their warranty is started covering the screen and it becomes a whole thing that they'd rather avoid. But many countries have laws that say you can't do that, and even though it doesn't make sense from a mechanical, like if you're the person repairing it, you're all nervous that it's going to explode in your hands, but the law says that they still have to.
FTC says it in the U.S. Warranty void if removed stickers are not legal. So, Alex, you might want to bring those devices back in.
Alex wouldn't trust them again. Like, you
the FTC put
stuff.
Six companies on notice saying, by the way, I think one of them was Sony for their PlayStation, that their warranty practices violate federal law. If you buy a car with a warranty, take it to a repair shop to fix it, then have to return the car to the manufacturer. The car company, in the U.S. anyway, isn't legally allowed to deny the return because you went to another shop. The same is true. So I guess it's true here. Of any consumer device, it costs more than $5. thanks to the 1975 Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. So those stickers, warranty,
tell it to the folks that make the tractor stuff, you know, John Deere, and
yeah,
you know, that's,
yeah, this is the right to repairs issue. Yeah, but this is different. So that's interesting. So the FTC says, you know, you can't say no to a repair. Apple's design precludes such stickers, but Apple geniuses are trained to look for the signs of consumer meddling and will sometimes decline warranty service if it's been repaired by an owner or a third party.
So they can decline warranty service. They can charge you for it, but they don't want you to refuse service of any kind. And the flip side is that some technicians don't want to work on this stuff because it's got like a lithium ion battery in it. They don't know if you've changed that, if it's going to burn. You know, they're being incredibly risk adverse, which is too far the other way. And there's probably some happy middle ground where they can cover the base repair. And there's something wrong with it, you still have to pay for additional repairs. Their repair warranty doesn't cover additional damage to that device.
And there were a couple of different dimensions to that warranty void if a sticker removed law. Part of it was that just simply arguing that the owner of this device did not agree to those terms. You can't just simply say, you just can't simply print something on a label saying, oh, by the way, you've just agreed to this by virtue of the fact that you've seen the sticker. But there were also important knock-on effects regarding what you can do to a device you actually own and what are the legal responsibilities, right, of a company. And that really is the basic principle, that do I own this computer or did I just give Apple or Sony or whatever $2,000 for a license to use this thing that they still have rights over? And that's a dangerous, dangerous ground. So I'm glad that the various governments are insisting on this.
It's going to be super interesting because we'll soon have self-driving cars. And are you going to be allowed to repair, like self-repair your self-driving car that then has to work as part of the hive mind with everybody else? We're moving into a whole new realm of technology.
Lisa has an Audi that has cameras in the mirrors that you use for parking and driving. And some schmuck knocked her mirror off. Happens all the time in a car, right?
And now it's upset all the time.
Well, it's a big deal. If you knock the mirror off, and the mirror was fine. We were able to snap it back, but it broke the blinker, which had to be fixed, and it broke the camera. So we had it, actually didn't break the camera, but we had the mirror fixed. And then the auto body shop said, but it's not, you can't drive it. You have to bring it to Audi to get the cameras recalibrated.
Right.
To which Lisa said, I've been driving cars without cameras for 20 years. Give me my car. And they said, okay. Yeah. But I think there is that conception that if you ruin the integrity of the self-driving systems.
Well, I can say, well, like, this is why we don't rent equipment. You know, like, why I don't rent equipment. Because I don't know where, like, I don't rent my stuff out. I don't rent other people's stuff very often because I'm always, you know, generally 10%, 20% of the stuff that you rent doesn't work right. You know, and so it's because you don't know where that equipment's been.
So there is a federal law. Good luck getting it enforced.
Right.
The FTC's kind of busy right now, but it is against the law. It's interesting. The Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act of 1975.
It's complicated. This is yet another example of brand new technology that absolutely cannot handle the limitations of laws that were passed even just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I think the British version of the highway crash insurance highway safety institute in the United States, you know, the crash test video people, just published a paper a couple of weeks ago on crash test standards for that they're going to be applying to self-driving cars. And there's a long, long paper in which they're explaining a lot of the different issues here. And one of them is that from the point of view of the insurer, in a self-driving car, the car itself is the driver. So the person inside the car is not going to be liable for any crash that happens. So that adds extra color to the idea of a fleet operator versus the creator of that car. A fleet operator wanting to make a repair that's maybe off the books. Well, you've just compromised the integrity of the car, and the car itself is now going to be responsible. So at that point, whom do you sue? Do you sue the manufacturer of the car because they still have responsibility for the safety and operation of that vehicle? Or do you get to the person who operated the fleet? And then there's the problem of can you then say that the operator of the car is actually the software? And so now the software can do an integrity check and say, okay, I don't think these cameras or these LIDARs are in alignment anymore. Therefore, I'm going to shut down this car immediately and not allow it to operate, because just like I'm not going to lend my car to a drunk driver, the software is not going to allow the car to be operated by a sensor that it doesn't have any trust in. So it's really interesting. I'll also recommend a YouTube channel called Rich Rebuilds, Rich as in Richard, Rich Rebuilds. This is a guy who buys salvage title Teslas as a hobby and fixes them, even though, of course, like Tesla themselves do not want anybody but Tesla touching these things. And it's so interesting to look at all the different dimensions of this. Like on one of his first rebuilds, he wound up paying about $6,000 all in on this beautifully like first generation Tesla sedan. But there was always that fear. He had to shoot video the first time he took it to a Tesla supercharger, because he'd been charging it off of a home charger all this time. He knew that as soon as he plugged it into a Tesla supercharger, the car is going to call home to mama and say, hi, I am Tesla ID number XXXXXXX. Please supercharge me. And then maybe the Tesla would say, oh, you have a salvage title. Not only am I not going to supercharge you, but I'm also going to disable your computer so that you'll have to have this thing towed away. So there's a lot of discussions that still need to be had, and a lot of lawsuits that I think have to be argued before we're going to figure out how all this stuff is going to work.
Yeah, I'd be pretty pissed off if I pulled up to a supercharger and my car got disabled. That would be a bad experience.
To be fair, his current car that he's building was like in one of the floods in Texas and was like flooded up to like almost like the dashboard for about 15 days before it was pulled out.
Wow.
So I don't know.
I know. Wow. I know I got into a lot of trouble when I was a kid. When I was 12 years old, I got my Apple IIe. And of course, within days, my dad came in and the Apple IIe was opened. And I had...
You voided the warranty.
He could smell the soldering.
Oh, good man.
I was updating my Apple IIe so that I could play...
Awesome.
So that instead of the speaker, I could play out of the stereo system. And so there was, you know, there was a little bit of work being done to take the speaker out and put in a phono jack and get the proper impedance. And my dad was very upset that I took a $2,000 computer and started soldering it. But my grandfather was very proud of me.
I would be. Yep. Yeah.
Hell that was yeah. one of the greatest things about the Apple II. Every Easter vacation, like my mom would pick me up like on the last day of school, and we would load up the car with like three or four Apple IIe's and like a dozen disk II drives, because they knew that like I knew how to fix these things, and rather than like send this out to a shop, I would just go to the 74 LSS like TTL logic chips. It's usually one of these things that blew like on the daughter board on the disk II. Then I would do like a speed check and I would calibrate it. Then my friends would come over and we'd copy games like with these 12 sets of drives, and it was a really great vacation. So it was better than having a pool, I'll tell you that. But again, it's about the principle of ownership, the idea of
now you know how nerds are made, ladies and gentlemen.
Also, it allowed us to spend the entire spring break without ever having to leave the house and getting any sunshine.
Yeah, perfect. So, what could be better?
I do think that we're getting to a point where it is a thought of whether we're, you know, like there's this whole like whether you're going to work on your car. The other question is whether you're going to own a car. Like, are you getting to a point with self-driving cars where when you want a car, you just say you want a car and a car comes?
I don't think
my
daughter is ever going to own a car.
I don't think my kids are going to own a car. Yeah. I think they're going to be, there's a whole idea of they're going to be like, oh, driving, you know, something, you know, you know, a lot of the cars, by the time they get older, I think a lot of them aren't going to have steering wheels, and they're not going to have, you know, they're just going to come pick you up and take you where you're going to go. You're going to watch a movie while you're getting there. And I have to admit, I had a lot of meetings yesterday, and I spent like 4.5 hours in the car.
Ugh,
and I would
love the last thing you want to do
to not drive again.
Because of all traffic. It's not just young people. There have been a couple times in the past year where, again, I'm traveling on business, and here's a situation where 5 years ago I was like, okay, the only way to do this is to rent a car. And now I'm like, I can either spend $60 to rent a car, or I can spend $80 to have someone drive me there and back. And I would much rather spend those couple of hours just like sitting in the back of a car, not being panicked about, I have never driven in Iowa before. Do they really care about speed limits here? Where's the exit? Am I going to miss it? And I would much rather spend extra to not have to drive and be able to nap and or watch a movie or actually work.
Well, I think it's been genius, and for Uber and Lyft to get to a point where it did change all of our
perception. I mean, I think
all of the way we look at it, because taxis were not a great experience, and they weren't available in a lot of places. Right. And now we don't think about
it. I have to say,
that.
This is an urban notion, because if you live in the country or you live in the Midwest, you can't.
It's really hard to get, in just case you're wondering, it's hard to get an Uber to come to Sarver, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. But if you live in an urban or even suburban area, this isn't such a far-fetched notion.
In Novato, Sunday morning.
Who would have thought you wouldn't have a map 20 years ago? Would have thought the car would tell you where to turn.
Well, I remember the first time we had GPS, we were in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. It was like the first week I had the new iPhone, you know, with a GPS, and I just kept on showing my wife, just going, "Can you believe it? It's like it shows you right where you're. You know, this is amazing.
It's
incredible. Like, I don't need a map. I don't need directions.
We know
just
where
tell
we
me,
are.
Just give me an address." And you know, and I had GPS units that you hook to your laptop that you put on the dashboard, and I had TomToms and everything else. But the idea that your phone has it was amazing. You know,
soon your phone will have Oprah. Apple, Oprah, Apple. Apple has made a deal with Oprah Winfrey to a unique, Apple says, multi-year content partnership. Oprah will create original programs that embrace her incomparable ability to connect with audiences around the world. That's all Apple said. Oprah still has her own network.
And she bringing still, Dr. Phil with her the way that Jimmy
God,
bought Dre?
Please don't bring Dr. Phil. But the question is, how are we going to see any of this? And we've talked about this before. Peter Kafka, writing in Recode, says there are some of the theories, the thoughts that TV and media executives have about how Apple might do this. Some industry observers expect Apple to make some or all of the content available free for users of Apple TV's app, which I'm kind of leaning. When Apple TV app first came out, I thought this is ridiculous and unusable. But now that Netflix is in there, it is now once again the home screen of my Apple TV. I had disabled it. I use it a lot more. It is also on iOS. Apple's told some industry executives it intends to strengthen that hub by making it a focal point to sell subscriptions to other companies' TV services, as Amazon already does. So that's one option. Other people are thinking Apple will bundle its content into a very big subscription service, Apple Music Plus, and maybe even including Apple Care, Kafka says. Most interesting and confusing to me, one TV executive who has talked to Apple says Apple intends to sell a standalone subscription to its original video shows, priced below Netflix. Netflix is somewhere between $8 and $11 a month right now in the U.S. So what do you guys think?
I think it's...
Go ahead, Alex.
Oh, go ahead.
Alex is the Hollywood connections.
I think that its own subscription service makes sense in the long term. You know, I think that it, you know...
That's what Grubel says as well. Gruber says, he says, include the original video content with an Apple Music subscription. You don't want another subscription.
They have no catalog content, so their value prop is much smaller than Netflix or HBO or any of those other channels that have vast libraries of older shows.
Right.
Yeah, but my thinking has changed in the past year or two. Alex and I used to talk about this, and I would say I don't understand how Apple could effectively compete with an existing service like Netflix or a service that's supported by already big content providers like Hulu, but. The moves that they've been making have gotten me to really, really rethink a lot of this. And one of it is that Apple is the classic company that they don't care. They don't need to spend they don't care about spinning something up in the next year. They care about making incremental progress until they have something wonderful 5 years from now. So it doesn't matter if they can't really even compare with Amazon Prime Video for the next 5 years. As long as they keep making these deals and slowly start acquiring wonderful content, they could wind up with something really, really valuable. Secondly, we're in a world in which if Apple is not talking about buying Fox's properties right now, I have no idea what they're up to. Because
Disney and Comcast both bidding, and a lot. Comcast bid is now $62.5 billion, I think, $64 billion.
I'm really rooting for Disney because we got to get the MCU to
kill Comcast.
You got to get Wolverine with Captain America.
That's all I got to say.
Yeah, great. Without turning this into a comic movie podcast.
I think Apple is an interesting idea.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea in that it would immediately give them like a really good library, and thirdly, they don't have to really compete with Netflix. I think it would be a really big win for them if they simply said, "Here is our TV app, and when you launch the TV app, here is all the original programming you have available to you at Apple. And by the way, here's an icon for Netflix, here's an icon for Hulu, here's an icon for HBO Go. Some of the stuff you might be able to buy through the service, but if you've already subscribed to Netflix, they're fine with that. The idea is that now you're not thinking of the Apple TV as just another device that has the Netflix logo on it. You're thinking of the Apple TV app that has, oh wow, that new Oprah show, or that new spinoff of Firefly that they just got in 2019, 2020. That, again, it's not the reason why you're going to subscribe, but it's there on the screen, so you might try it out. Particularly if it has that Westworld effect, where people are now, enough of your friends are now talking about it that you want to jump in on season two. So now it really does become a destination as opposed to just simply a hallway you pass through to eventually turn the doorknob that says Netflix on it. So yeah, no, I do believe that I can really see them wanting to really have a lot of original content and creating a unique service.
I still think that, I mean, and I think that Apple will probably just keep on making its own content. I don't think it'll buy anybody, but I mean, I still think that if they were going to buy a company, Disney would make more sense, or I guess what you'd call it, a merger. But I mean, if you look at the AR opportunities at the theme parks as well, you know, as a proof of concept, as well as all the content and as well as all the back catalog, as well as educational opportunities against that content. I think that there'd be an enormous number of opportunities for Apple to leverage, you know, what Disney's doing, as well as the fact that Disney, you know, their content right now is printing money and doesn't seem like it's going to, I mean, with this, other than Solo, it's doing okay.
You know? I don't think Apple could safely absorb Disney. It's just too big.
Yeah. Culturally, I think that'd be the biggest problem.
And that's one of the reasons Apple doesn't do these big acquisitions. Right. 20th Century Fox might be easier to swallow.
I think it'd be halfway in between. I think really this content play is going to be Apple really trying to build only tentpoles. So, you know, that's where Amazon's trying to do that, because Amazon had the problem with they just started firing out lots of content and most of it was really bad or mediocre. And so you just end up like, I don't think of Amazon like, oh, I'm going to go watch Amazon. But I do think, oh, I'm like,
you need a destination.
What is genius about a Netflix is that I actually go to Netflix only looking for the logo. Like when they first put it on, I was like, do they really want to do that? Like, or do they just want to fade into everything else and have us just watch content? But now I just go through looking for Netflix series because I know that those are going to be, I actually think they're going to be better than a lot of the other content that's there.
Well, that's why the Apple TV app has become more and more useful. Adding Netflix was kind of the critical last piece of that puzzle. I wonder, what if Apple just sold the content? Like, just put it in the iTunes store, didn't do anything different, just made it something they sell.
I don't think they're going to want to do that because it lacks influence. I think they're better, more likely to package it with iMusic, or Apple Music, and
is the TV app important enough to make it be the locus for this? Like, say, hey, this is a reason to use the TV.
It could be the draw if you have something,
or you have to have an Apple TV or an iOS device.
You can stage it too, like put it in TV and then a year later put it in iTunes.
Remember, they're a hardware company, and to some degree, everything they do still is aimed at getting you to buy hardware, right?
Well, but you could do a part anymore.
I think they're transitioning away from that. They really don't want to have reliance on hardware. They really do want to become a software and services company, as well as because they will always be a design firm. First and foremost, they like to design hardware, and that's where their spirit is. But I really don't think I've had to sort of. I myself have sort of had to retrain myself to thinking, but how will this affect their hardware business? I really do think that they do see services now as a business in and of themselves, and one that they're willing to put 5 or 10 years worth of equity into developing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
I guess that's the fundamental question here is this, are they acquiring all this stuff because they want to promote services? Or are they acquiring this stuff because they want to promote hardware?
Well, I think they can do both. I mean, I think that you could put out the raw content. For instance, you could have lots of extras and all kinds of other things that are only available in the Apple TV. I mean, if I was going to do it, I would put out the Oprah content, the core show, as a as a singular thing that goes out everywhere, that you can get everywhere. And then I would have tons of extras. Maybe it's 360 in the studio while they were shooting. Maybe it's other AR content. Maybe it's additional content that's only available on the platform. So if you're really into that, you are going to go find it. And you may, if the platform is big enough, like especially the Apple Music platform at this point, it's 60 million. I think it's 60 million users.
Yeah.
Is big enough that just if you think about putting that out and promoting it to the Apple Music audience, you could theoretically get way more views than you would typically get on a broadcast, than Oprah would get on a broadcast if they just used that platform by itself and only went out to that platform. So it is, and it would be something that if they did decide to do it exclusively, it would be something that would be difficult for a company like Spotify to match. You know, like they just don't have the budget to do that. Like Apple can sign deals that are, you know, I have no idea how much they paid Oprah, but it wasn't $10.
Yeah. Right.
You know, this is...
It was Oprah money.
Well, they've spent... They admit to spending $1 billion so far. So.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that was in the tens or more.
More.
You know, yeah. $100 million. I wouldn't be surprised if they paid
Oprah.
Well,
she's got more money than God, so it has to be... I would think for Oprah, it'd have to be more than money.
Oh, I think it is.
I'm sure it's $100 million, yeah. But it'd have to be more than money.
Complete creative control.
Also,
which she
has her own freaking network.
Yeah.
So what are you going to give her that Owen doesn't give her?
You're going to give her... Right. You're going to give her two things. You're going to give her an international audience as opposed to keeping trying to sell OWN to individual cable subscribers. You're also going to give her freedom away from individual proprietors saying, how come the OWN channel is not getting the views that we were expecting it to get? All these streaming services do pay attention to the metrics of each and every show that they buy, but it's not necessarily about they're not going to buy 13 episodes and then stop airing them after number four because they didn't like the numbers on the first three. It's really all about what does this give our library that it doesn't have already. Is this relationship one that we want to continue to develop? And then sometimes you do have the sort of smash hit that brings new eyeballs to the service. But a lot of when you read individual interviews with people who have been in these deals and they feel like it's been a successful relationship, what they say is that they just give us the money, we give them shows, and that's really about it. They don't tell us about how we feel as though this person you're considering hiring for this role is not going to bring in this demographic or this sort of rating. They're going to give them a package of a season of shows. It's either going to do well enough to merit another contract for another 12 or it's not. And if it doesn't, you get those 12 episodes. You got to write an entire storyline. The new version of One Day at a Time, which is brilliant, couldn't have happened really on regular television because they would not. I don't think they would have had the strength to the security to simply say we're going to write essentially a 12 episode arc with individual episodes, but we're going to tell a story that starts right here and we know what the last story of the season is going to be, and it's just brilliant stuff. It's not an opportunity you can give other people. That's what you give these creators.
The Cobra Kai people said the same thing. They said they went with YouTube because YouTube guaranteed them a first full season, and that was more important to them than money or any other consideration.
One Day at a Time, brilliant.
Oh yes.
Does it still have the guy, the super with the keys?
Yes. It's the same. No, it's not like it's. It really is like a total reboot. So there is a Schneider.
But now he's a
Canadian immigrant, and he's like his father owns the building, and he's sort of like a hipster who's a recovering drug addict. But they're all Cuban Americans. They're all really talking about really interesting topics, kind of like the original one was supposed to be. Only they're doing it at a much, much higher level. By the end of I really can't recommend it highly enough.
What is this on?
That's Netflix. The thing. I think it's on Netflix. Oh. Yeah.
Who knows anymore, right? Doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Cobra Kai is also brilliant.
So what's Cobra Kai about?
Cobra Kai is the sequel to The Karate Kid 34 years later.
Oh, wow.
And it's the actual actors. Like, it's a sequel with the actors.
It's a shame. Yeah,
and it, cool. It is so good.
There aren't any new ideas in Hollywood. It's like, what can we remake?
What was really weird is they made a YouTube video a few years ago where they said, we think this whole story was wrong. Daniel was the bully and Johnny was taking advantage of him.
Yeah.
And the entire series is like that. Like, Johnny's lost everything. He's down on his luck. Daniel LaRusso has this super rich car dealer, karate chopping prices on billboards. And it just, it pays homage to everything, but it skews it so beautifully at the same time.
It's probably the first, I think it's one of the first successful YouTube
Must be because I, you know, I can't think of a lot of YouTube Red
and YouTube Premium titles. Just went international yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. I just noticed my YouTube Red became a YouTube Premium.
Oh yeah, it's called,
which Premium, is good because I no longer think that I'm watching porn.
So let me throw you a curveball. According to Bloomberg, Apple is near a deal to the rights for an animated movie from Cartoon Saloon, which is an Ireland-based Oscar-nominated animation studio. The movie is at least a year from release because it has yet to be made, but Apple has been in talks to buy distribution rights for the U.S. and some other countries. If you want an Oscar, you got to release it to the theaters. We know that. What? Why would they be trying to buy an animated feature film?
They're going to keep on trying to buy features, and I think that an animated feature is...
They've bought features before?
No, I think they're going to keep on buying. I think they're going to start buying features, and I think they're going to buy more features. I think there's definitely... I mean, I think Apple is going to...
They want to be a content company.
They're going to build a lot of content, yeah. And I think that the only reason we're not seeing them do it in music is because I'm going to guess that they probably signed contracts that said they can't do that.
Right. Ah, interesting.
You know, I think that... Again, Spotify outlined that. Spotify can't actually fund the making of the music. You know, like it's become clear that their contracts are...
Apple's made videos, right? They've helped
keep them away from doing original.
So this is interesting. So is there the general consensus that Apple will do this as a subscription, like a Apple Music Plus subscription?
It could be separate. I think it makes more sense to make it Apple Media or Apple or Apple, whatever. Yeah. I think that it gets really complicated if you have two different subscriptions.
Nobody wants that.
Even
Google is really selling that.
And again, they have no catalog content to provide value for the video subscription. Like, would you get three shows?
I would buy an Apple Music subscription if I also got some show I really wanted to watch. That's enough to put it over the top. It's close enough to Spotify and all the others. That would be enough to put it over the top.
A good example is my family basically has iTunes, Hulu, Netflix, and YouTube TV. And YouTube. My kids watch an enormous amount of YouTube. I watch, and my mother-in-law watches YouTube live. And then we all watch Netflix, and my wife watches a lot of Hulu. And then I buy movies on iTunes. So that's pretty much almost all of our... all of our content. The only one that sticks out is HBO because of Game of Thrones. So my subscription to HBO always starts about a week before Game of Thrones, and then I just cut it off at the end because it's cheaper than buying the shows individually.
You don't go to the cable company. You just do HBO Now.
HBO Now. I don't do any cable.
Well, it's a lot easier. This is why they want you to go through a quick cable company, because it's such a pain in the ass to cancel anything through a cable company.
Well, and not only
it's too easy to cancel it on an app.
Well, not only that, the moment I see that code of like register your thing with your whatever, I'm like, okay, well, we're done. We're done with this relationship. You know, like I'm not interested in doing that whole register BS.
No, me too. Know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, now it seems like you have to do it more than monthly. I get it all the time now.
And again, the one that has been really what I was surprised at is how much my wife uses Hulu. And it's because of all of her, So You Think You Get my wife used to be my daughter ballet dancers. And so they
watch ballet.
No, they watch So You Think You Can Dance, Think You Can Dance. And The Voice, I guess, is their big one. But they can watch them whenever they want. If they miss a couple of weeks, they just catch up on them.
I think we should get rid of Comcast and just do everything over the top. That's what you do.
I've been over the top for 10 years, more than 10 years. I haven't had.
How do you watch?
The only time.
How are you watching soccer? Are you watching the World Cup?
I can watch it on. I haven't watched any soccer.
You could do all this on streaming.
I don't understand soccer. What? Sorry?
You could do it on streaming, though.
You can do it on YouTube. You can do it streaming, and you can do it on YouTube.
And you don't care about
YouTube TV.
You don't care about the. You don't care about at the Oscars.
No, and I could watch that on YouTube TV. It's on YouTube TV.
Oh,
it's
YouTube
on,
TV.
It's,
sure.
You just watch. That's what solved it. Like the biggest thing that solved it for me was as soon as YouTube TV came out, and it was like $25 a month, and now I've got all my live channels, and I can, if I really want some live channels on the East Coast, I can VPN into my DC facility and switch my location. And
so you have a little bit of an advantage in this.
No, but even without that, on my San Francisco, I'm on YouTube. The YouTube TV is genius. I mean, it is just easy to use. It works on my phone. It works on a web page. It works on my Apple TV. The interface on the Apple TV is a little weird, but it works okay. And it's just been like this super easy to use platform, and it solved all my needs. You know, watching This Week with George Stephanopoulos and all that other stuff on Sunday mornings is all there. I also couldn't do my show, The Teardown, without it because I can screen record. So anyway, so it's I think that those one, that mix has been enough. But I haven't. I had regular TV. We experimented with it. I think like 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And my kids suddenly, I forgot, they don't see any ads. Suddenly they needed this cereal and they needed this game and they needed this. And we were like, okay, we got to get rid of the TV immediately. Because it wasn't because of the cost. It was because of the ads, you know, and the ads driving. I didn't realize how much my kids were driven to buy things. You know, kids are not, it's not fair to have kids at three to 8 years old watching shows that tell them all the cool things they should buy. And so all of that goes away.
Yeah.
And my kids now are so conditioned out of it, they won't watch. They get angry at YouTube videos that show ads for more than 15 seconds.
The only drag to all this is I still need Comcast for internet.
Well, I still use Comcast for internet. I just get the internet. You can just get the internet package.
Just get the plain old internet.
But that's all going to change, you know, with 5G. Because 5G, you're going to have the choice of, you know, 5G, the cell companies are going to start competing with the cable companies. And so you're going to have, you know, so AT&T has it both ways. But you'll have, you know, T-Mobile and Verizon will be competing. You know, what they want is your whole 5G to be the only thing you use. You're like, you're going to get a 5G subscription, and that's going to be your phone. It's going to be your home internet, and you're not going to even have a Wi-Fi router. You're just going to have 5G. You know, like that all your stuff attaches to. And that's why they really want.
When you add your cable bill to your YouTube TV bill to your Hulu bill to your HBO Now bill, it's still less.
Oh yeah, I mean mine is. You know, I spend
not much less,
not a lot less. I only have.
You don't do it to save money. You do it to eliminate the relationship with the cable company.
I just do it because it's easier. I mean, it's 50, 60 bucks a month, and you know,
it's gotta be more than that. I'd pay that for the internet.
Oh no, my internet's more than that because I got the fastest internet. But that was, you know, my internet is a
but
lot you, more
but
than
okay
that.
Yeah so the so that's, but I've got that's I've got, an incremental cost because you had to buy the internet anyway for the speed.
Yeah, I've got 200 down and 30 up or whatever. Yeah. It's expensive. I mean, it's not. I mean, not super expensive. Not as expensive as my office. But
I better talk to my wife before I do this. I think she's kind of tied to the cable company.
But that's the dangerous thing for any industry. It's not just innovation. It's when another company manages to break somebody's long-term habit, that's dangerous as hell.
Yeah.
As soon as I got my head around the idea of how about if you don't subscribe to cable, and it's just something you subscribe to because how else are you going to get your TV? Even though you're getting Netflix, even though you're getting these other things, it was just felt like such a big step. And now I'm totally out of the habit of watching a TV show on anybody else's schedule. The times I still have my HD Home Run, like a digital tuner that's capturing to video files on Plex. So I still like watch like the Colbert Show every night, and whenever there's an interruption for commercials, I am just so annoyed because it's just not something I'm used to seeing. And also a lot of these commercials are just insulting and annoying. But now there's a checkbox in Plex where if you check this box, it will figure out where the commercials are and actually delete them from the video file. So for the next 30 years of my life, I never have to see those commercials at all. We're being trained not to even accept the presence of commercials in a movie or in a TV show. And my goodness, is that a breath of fresh air? It screws a whole bunch of industries, but they're never going to get that back once they've gotten people out of that habit.
And you know, my kids, I think, just think that we must have lived in the dark ages. Like my son, I think I tweeted about this a while ago, but my son was like, we finished Lost in Space, and he was like, so when's the next season coming out? And I'm like, I was like, in a year, and he's like, year, and I said, hey, when I used to watch these, we had to wait a week between every episode, and he was just like, man, you know, like that was the craziest thing he'd ever heard.
I am now really reluctant to start any season that I have to wait a week to see the next thing.
I won't like Homeland doesn't exist until it's out.
Yeah, when it's all out, you know, like then I'll watch it.
Then we can start talking.
Well, those habits are changing, and that's interesting. Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I have YouTube. I pay for all this stuff anyway. I should probably kill the cable bill, but I can't do it.
Just make an Ozymandias really wall where you'll have all the TVs on at once, just like 12 TVs at once.
When I'm in hotels, I see like cable and I'm like, oh, I wonder. And I start scrolling through it and
it's
I'm
awful.
Like, yeah, I don't
there's
need
nothing
this
good at, on there. No.
I don't need this at all. Like, I don't
We've
feel like
about this
I don't
before.
Feel like
it's like it's the kids, right? They go to their grandparents, they watch TV and they're like, what is this? Why can't I choose what I want? Why is there, what is a commercial? What is, I don't understand. Why is your TV broken?
Your TV is broken. No, it's just from the 50s, son.
Well, and my kids are so, you know, like they sit there and they play, you know, they play Roblox or Minecraft or whatever while they're watching, you know, movies. And the only time they don't do that is when I'm or they'll be watching YouTube, Dan TDM. They'll be watching him playing while they're playing. And it's just like this. They're kind of used to that whole process all the time, except for when we have family movie night, the one time you have to actually put your iPad down. You can't.
Let's get our picks of the week. I'm going to start with you, Andy Iannocco.
Mine is not a pick. It's a tip. It's a reminder of something that maybe you already knew about, but we'll forget about in a time of crisis. It is the startup code for resetting the Mac system management controller. I had to use this because I still don't know the reason why my trackpad on my MacBook Pro stopped working. The click on the MacBook Pro stopped working last night. And I don't know why it's a haptic keyboard. So I could feel the, when it's dead, it's like tapping on a part of your table. So I was getting the click, but the operating system was not recognizing that there was a click anywhere. I could mouse, I could use the keyboard to command tab all over the place. And so I was only able to, and so I still didn't know exactly what was going wrong, but there's the default things that you do when you are in a problem like that. Including make sure you unplug all the USB stuff because maybe you forgot that you've got a mouse plugged in and something is pushing the button of that other mouse. Things like turning off Bluetooth because, again, maybe you've got a magic trackpad somewhere and something fell on top of it and that's registering as a click somewhere. But the system management controller is one of these classic, I have no idea what's wrong, but if I restart and hold down shift control option power, it will basically it's the part of the firmware that essentially registers what your devices are and what they're supposed to do. And of course that did clear up the problem. It got fixed. Again, I don't know exactly what the problem was, but you do that because number one, maybe it will fix the problem and you don't care how it fixed it so long as you've got your trackpad back. And secondly, if you do take it in for service, someone's going to ask you, well, did you try resetting the system management controller? And you want to be able to say, oh, yes, of course, I tried doing that. But I look like an idiot. Of course, I reset that. And so they're going to probably do it anyway. And that saves you having to make sure that you've hidden all the bad photos off of your machine before you take it into service.
It's not too hard to do.
And it doesn't cost you anything.
Resetting the PRAM. Yeah. It's probably something you should have in your vocabulary of finger tricks.
Yes. I've reset the PRAM even recently.
Yeah, I do it all the time. I don't know why, but I do. When I had my Mac Pro, the trash can Mac, and it just never worked right. I reset that SMC like daily, and it still never really worked right.
Like a Siri shortcut.
Yeah, good tip, Andy Iannocco, Mr. Rene Ritchie. What do you? You haven't been here a while. I bet you have a few things you could pick.
I do. But I'm going to do them one at a time. I'm going to space myself out. So the one I want to talk about today is Apple announced this, or Logitech announced this back in March. It is the new rugged keyboard and the Logitech Crayon, which is like the Apple Pencil. It uses Apple Pencil technology, but it has a few differences. The first is that it insta-pairs. There is literally no pairing. You just touch it to the iPad and it starts working because that's what you want in a classroom environment. And it works almost the same as the Apple Pencil. It doesn't do pressure, but it does do angle. So it does all the same stuff. You just can't press harder to get a bigger line. But it's also only $50, so it's way cheaper. And the nice thing about it is you can get started with it immediately. Literally turn the iPad on and go. And the other thing that they put out is this Logitech keyboard that I actually broke off the keyboard part. It's on the too far away for me to reach, but it comes with this rugged case that you can put on and it looks like a Chromebook, but you can take it out and it becomes an iPad again. It just became available. It is not, as far as I know, available to consumers yet. That's probably later in the year, but schools can start ordering them. I think they can even order them along with iPads to get the whole shebang. And Trinity and I have been testing it out for the last couple of days.
Nice. Yeah, I saw your article on it. And you like drawing with it.
I do. It really works with the 9.7-inch iPad, not the iPad Pro, although technology is compatible. Only the new iPad has that instant pairing technology.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the ProMotion refresh rate, so it's not quite as perfect as the new generation iPad Pros, but it's almost identical to the previous generation iPad Pro. So if you liked pencil on that, this is what you're getting for about $50.
Nice.
Yeah.
Alex, I bet you have something fun and interesting to pick.
Mine is the most amazing pick I've made.
The most amazing pick in the history of ready? Alex Lindsay.
I'm My ready. Pick today is Notes. It's
what?
This little app that sits on your
Notes.
Computer.
You use
Notes.
That?
I don't just use it. I use it every day, all day. And I realized someone pointed out, the only reason I thought I'd use it as a pick is because someone was amazed that I use Notes. But the reason I use Notes is because A, I can draw on things. I can make little pictures. I can draw things out. I can write ideas down. And it all gets transferred to all of my devices really fast and really easily. I have to admit that I don't find that Pages and Keynote and all these other things are necessarily as fluid. I just know that if I write something down really quickly in Notes, I can make checklists in Notes. You can say, oh, I want to start a checklist. Right. I can do and I do that all the time. So I sit there and I go, I have a checklist of things that need to get done today, and I'll make my, I just know that it's everywhere. You know, all this, and I don't have to think about it. I don't have to share it. I don't have to put it on the web. I can be connected to the internet or not connected to the internet and just kind of work through it. And it is, I think it's a very overlooked app. That I realize that I use all the time, and no one else uses it. Like, it's always like, it seems like nobody else. Everyone's always surprised when I use when I open up Notes and use it. I write whole articles on it because if I'm writing the outlines for my articles, I want them on all the devices while I'm thinking through them. And then I usually actually will sit there and just write the whole article and finish it off, you know, there. And then I cut and paste it. If I'm doing like a paper with pictures and stuff like that, I'll write the whole thing and then I cut and paste it into Pages. And then I start adding pictures and make it pretty and everything else. But it is, it's great. That's all.
You know, it's funny because the built-in apps often get short shrift.
Yeah.
Because you have them.
Yeah.
Right. And admittedly, they're never quite as full-featured as a third-party app because the third-party apps have to add something or you wouldn't even look at them.
Right.
But often they have all the functionality you need.
Well, it's just the fact that it's so seamless. It's built into everything. It's always installed. It's always there. And I can add, you know, I can type some stuff on my iPad or on my computer and then open my iPad and draw some pictures. And, you know, there's just all these
things. You can throw like links into it. You can throw pictures into it. You can throw web pages. It's also, you can collect everything you want. It's almost like a scrapbook that syncs to everything.
Yeah. So it's kind of I admit that it's my kind of easygoing Evernote thing, you know, that I just kind of use for all, you know, to kind of encapsulate things. Now I've told everyone, if you steal my computer, the first thing to do is look at
Notes.
No, Alex will delete them too fast.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why you need to use File Vault.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this edition of Mac Break Weekly. Welcome back, Renee. We missed you.
I missed being here so much. So good to see you.
iMore.com. If you want to follow his writings, iMore.com/Vector. If you want to watch the practically daily Vector podcast about all things Apple, really a great
There's a whole Siri shortcuts video. So if anybody's confused about Siri shortcuts, I try to make it as step-by-step as possible.
I must watch that. Alex Lindsay, you follow him at his Twitter feed is probably the best place. AlexLindsay.
And I will be in the 28th. I'll be at Adorama's Inspire conference. I'll put it back on Twitter. But it's next week. So I'm going to be speaking at, I said 26th on my tweet and I couldn't re-edit it. So I was typing too quickly, but it's on my Twitter thing. I'll be talking for 2 hours about live streaming.
Darn it that you can't edit those things.
I know.
You can delete them and redo it.
I know.
It's tweet's been editable.
Anyway, I was just like, so I'll post it again on Twitter and a couple other places, but it's free. So you can go and chat with me. People have asked if it's live streaming. I'm still trying to find out if they're going to stream it. I don't know. I'm not streaming my own talk about streaming. I'm just talking about streaming. So anyway, if you're interested, come join me in New York.
Sweet. And of course, Andy Iannacco, he is at ihnatko.com and the same spelling on the Twitter. And his roller derby photos are fabulous. Actually, those come from April. You've got more recent ones, haven't you?
Yep. I actually haven't put that on that version of the website yet. It's but it's on my Flickr. If you go to flickr.com/andyi/photos/andyi.
And you're glad you stayed with Flickr, even though its future was in question with the purchase by Verizon and the renaming of it to Oath.
Yeah. I've been putting more of my, the stuff that I've worked. If there's a picture that I kind of worked hard to edit that looks kind of pretty, and I'm putting it on Flickr instead of just Instagram because I want it to look. It's my place for pictures that look kind of pretty. So hopefully,
they're going to be great. I'll tell you why. Smug Mug has bought them, and I interviewed Don McCaskill on Friday on Triangulation, and he gets it. And man, they know that Flickr is the greatest community of photo enthusiasts. And beloved by its users, and it's a crown jewel, and thank God it's not in Yahoo Oath's hands anymore. It's in Smug Mug's hands. Smug Mug, of course, is one of the best photo sites ever, and it complements Smug Mug's offerings very nicely. And Don told me they've kept the entire Flickr team intact. They're moving them into nice new offices, and
getting them standing desks.
Yeah, they're going to get them standing
out of the cages.
But one of the things I said is you immediately have to replace the flash-based slideshow on Flickr. Can you do that? Because Smug Mug has an excellent HTML5 slideshow. Yeah. So he said, oh, we do? I better get on that.
Port it!
Flickr has a unique role to play. That's separate from Instagram and separate from Smug Mug. It's the best place to put up a photo, make it look really, really good, and also be able to write more than one sentence about it. Yep. It's really, really nice. Yep.
And the community is great. The feedback, the response you get is great. Yeah. I'm a huge Flickr fan, and so when I heard this, and I'm a longtime user of Smug Mug, so when I heard that they bought Flickr, I couldn't have been more happy. He said all the right things. You know, they really understand Flickr, and they're going to preserve it. In fact, that's why they bought it. They bought it to save it. So I'm very, very happy about all that. He said, you know, Flickr started shortly after we started Smug Mug. We started Smug Mug in 2005, I think he said, and that he knows Stuart Butterfield and the Smug Mug team, the Flickr team very well. And so there was always a real connection. He said, we've always shared technology. We understand their stack. So it's going to be an easy thing. Ladies and gentlemen, you will join us again, I hope, next Tuesday. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch at twit.tv/live. If you do that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. If you can't watch live, we do have on-demand audio and video of everything we do at our website, twit.tv. In fact, this show is twit.tv/mbw. You can pick it up there or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. You'll automatically get it the minute it's available each and every week. Thanks for watching, and we will see you next time. Now get back to work because break time is over.